It's Sam Cedar launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
Hello, folks. This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator right now and save $50 on your device purchase at MajorityReport.ting.com.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, October 19th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, so today on the program, of course, the great Cliff Schechter. Looking back on the week that was. Also on the program today, giving us a film recommendation, best-selling author, actress, bon vivant, Isabel Gillies. And we also have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song this week. And we'll hit a couple of stories. More drones for the CIA. That's what the CIA wants. En route to becoming more of a paramilitary force than just collecting silly old intelligence. Joe Walsh, not the guy from the Eagles, but the crazy guy from Illinois, right? The congressman from Illinois. Yeah, he finds a little problem with that whole exception for the health of the mother or rape or incest in terms of abortion because, well, of course, that's all fictional. Women, they're never threatened by a pregnancy. Should all send them a dictionary with the words ecotopic. Is that what it is? Also, we touched on this in the better half of the program yesterday, but DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, looks like it's heading to the Supreme Court. Interesting dynamic there. And before we get to Cliff, I'm going to take a break in just a moment, but we have a new sponsor today. In addition to Ting.com, we have a special sponsor for the day. That is our very own listener, Blank Squirrel. You'll recall back during, I think it was it last year, sometime in, December. That's exactly right. It was in December. Yes. He submitted a Friday song called Pottersville. And fantastic song. Well, I guess just finished his album. It's most recent, and it's called Eating Chicken. The band, Decomposure, from Blank Squirrel Records. Available now on iTunes, Bandcamp, eMusic, Spotify, Amazon, and more. We should get this guy to help us with our marketing. And listeners of this program can use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 20% off Decomposure albums and merchandise at bandcamp.com. We have a link on the site at majority.fm. Plus, I think one or two of his videos, which are also super cool. And so we're going to take a break, and we'll be playing, in fact, is it A-Test? A-Test by Decomposure check all this stuff out at Bandcamp. You can find the link at majority.fm. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter.
I arrived at work some Friday morning early, oh six. Flatted out and sleep mouth dragging down from my coffee fix. Check my email.
This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Ting. Ting is a new mobile service that makes sense. They have been advertising on this show for a little bit, and it's all about bringing billing clarity, usability, and big savings to mobile phone users. It's built on the Sprint network. It has a simple plan, honest, fair pricing that bills megabytes, minutes, and text messages separately. If you don't use all of those minutes that you have, they don't charge you for them. If you go over, they charge you exactly a prorated rate. Ting.com has no premiums or penalties. You don't pay for more than you use. That's a great deal. They also have great customer service, and you can visit them today at majorityreport.ting.com. Use their usage calculator to see how much you'll save, and you get $50 on any device that you purchase from them in terms of a phone. Majorityreport.ting.com. Check it out. It just makes sense.
Conflicted, I wrote back a needed time. The weekend to talk to my wife and make a decision. This is the best one. The summer's coming soon. The contract signed. I research, I waffle, I just file the money so soon. Made it all. I can tell her how I was drawn to the green light. I'd be crazy not to think of me. I'm just like, hey, he wrote those essays, but in no such cause. But that from time to check's not everything was wrong. Can't uncut the whatever you have inside, you're gonna have to monetize it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, before we have Cliff Schechter on, of course, we need to have the proper introduction.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. If you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter. Libertas LLC.com.
That's right, folks. He's not Mr. Oil or Mr. Gas or Mr. Coal. He's Mr. Cliff Schechter.
I do my best. I do my best.
Was that not the most ridiculous line of? I mean, if that line to me in the debate really to me was sort of like the biggest expression of just how effed up our country is.
I know. Like, well, and also, in a way, it's sort of, yes. You know what? I don't have any, I was going to try to add something to that, but I think you're right. That is effed up because it's like, you're actually arguing over who's Mr. Cole.
Right. You know, Kevin Baker, in a piece in Harper's Magazine said, that's like saying, that's like accusing him of not being Mr. Drought, Mr. Emphysema, and Mr. Death.
You're not Mr. Black Lung. Ha ha! You're also not Mr. Bubonic Plague or Hantavirus, so take that.
And the sad thing is that the president has to go like, well, that's not 100% true. I mean, there's
you know what's sad. What puts it all in perspective for me? I just wrote a little piece on this, so I have to bring it up. Which you've probably seen it, and maybe you've talked about it on your show about the fact that George McGovern is pretty near death.
Yeah, I haven't mentioned it actually, but it is the case that he's not. He's basically not communicable. I guess is that he's not communicating anymore. So he's more or less in some type of coma, and I think we're near the end.
And it's sad, but it also is sort of when things like that happen. It's a shame because he's a good honorable guy, always was. It makes you look back at sort of a different time in politics when people would stand up forcefully who were very much in the mainstream against the idea of the military-industrial complex and war, and you know, in and of itself. I mean, what he used to say, what McGovern basically used to say was. I got my ideas on war and the defense industry from Eisenhower, who reminded us about the influence of the military-industrial complex. And McGovern himself, of course, was a war hero, which most people didn't know because I don't think anybody had been used to yet the kind of virulent populism that we now see on a daily basis. It existed in the South, certainly on issues of race, but not in national politics, I don't think, to the level, or I just don't think he was ready for what Nixon was going to throw at him in a modern media, campaign. And so he was sort of still sort of this old school, like you sell yourself on your political ideas, not on your biography, not on your puffery. And here was this guy that was a war hero. I think he was a fighter pilot, much like John Glenn, who in 1984 ran for president on his competence in the Senate, not in the fact that he had gone to that he was an astronaut and a war hero. And it sort of reminds you of a time where campaigns were simpler and actually more about substance. It reminds you of a time when not the time the Tea Party guys think existed back then, but what actually existed, when you could talk about ideas like war in and of itself being the last resort and wrong in most cases, and you could talk about inequality in ways not just in quiet rooms. And I'm not saying some of that isn't making a comeback now, because I think we've gotten so low. It's sort of where do you go from there? But in any case, it struck me. Didn't mean to hijack your show.
No. There was a great documentary about George McGovern called One Bright Shining Moment, I think it was. And it's definitely worth a watch. I think if it's on Netflix, that would be actually – I hope that I didn't steal the thunder of Isabel Gillies today. But that that's a great film to watch. But let's turn to the race because I want to we want to talk about this a little bit. And there's a couple other things I want to talk about too, because the president made a basically came out with a claim of veto that has to do with the grand bargain. But before we get there, so what do you think? I mean, the most interesting thing. I mean, we've done some of the debate coverage, obviously, on this program this week, and we've yet to really see how much this has played into the dynamic of the race. But I was a little bit worried, I think, probably 24 hours ago, but I'm not so much today.
Yeah, I'm not worried really hugely about it. I think what we're seeing, and you sent me a piece that Steve Kornacki wrote at Salon to check out, which I hadn't seen. I did see a piece by, what's his name, Charlie Cook. And I'm just going to go ahead and plug myself here, Sam. Because I was saying the same thing about 2 months ago, even when things looked better for Obama, which was that you could realistically, theoretically see the opposite of what played out in 2000, because popular vote is somewhat fluid. you know, there are states right now, and I'm sorry, I'm just going to say this, and I hope I don't offend good progressive people living in those states. I live in Ohio, and a lot of people take pot shots at us, and parts of this state, frankly, deserve it. But there are states where right now, in terms of all infrastructure and education, whatever, that you know, it almost is, I mean, conspiratorial in my mind, has become so regressive that you can see Obama losing by like 50 points. You know, I mean, look at what he lost by in Oklahoma and some other places last time. And so, we're becoming so polarized. That's part of it. Part of it is you know, who owns the media and other things. That if there's no pushback from a big national advertising campaign like you've got in the swing states, for example, and no pushback from electoral visits that change the media narrative, you know, I can just see this becoming something where you have massive sort of polarization. You've got, you could have Mitt Romney going to pick up a massive sort of, margin in certain places that just aren't being contested.
Well, that's what, Marcos Melitzis on, obviously, on the Daily Kos, Daily Cause,
come on,
pulled
Sam.
The crosstabs from that Gallup poll. And Obama-Romney margin, in the East, Obama by 4. In the Midwest, Obama by 4. In the West, Obama by 6. In the South, Romney by 22 points.
Right.
Now, it makes the possibility of this scenario that you're mentioning here, this notion that we're going to have a popular vote electoral split, I mean, it puts it in play. I don't think it's actually
right.
going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen either, but I think it's going to become – I mean, maybe not. In some ways, it could become increasingly likely in the years to come if we keep on the current path, although Texas is heading towards our direction,
right.
which is obviously a pretty big population center because of Hispanics and younger people going down there for opportunities and work and retirees and other things. So maybe not. I'm just saying I think it's possible. Certainly I think we're going to see things that you didn't used to see in the past. Well, you did. I shouldn't say that. You saw it in certain southern states. I think FDR, was it 1932, won something like 95% of the vote in Mississippi. I mean, the issue here is like the South has always had this problem. And again, I no offense to our southern progressive friends, but the South has had a lot of the features of an authoritarian state and a one-party state since the beginning of time. And that one-party state was the Democrats for a while. And now it's the Republicans. And there are certain southern states that are changing because of the same factors we discussed in Texas and are even obviously ahead of Texas and then Virginia, Florida, you know, place North Carolina. And I think you're eventually down the road, you're going to see Georgia and South Carolina head in that direction too. But there are other ones where people aren't necessarily moving to for those opportunities. Mississippi and Alabama come to mind. The border states, some of them, you know, Arkansas and Kentucky and some of those come to mind. And then some of the western states. And really the only thing you have balancing out in some of those states that are giving Democrats votes at all is the African-American population. I mean, in Mississippi, 80% of the white vote goes to Republicans, sometimes more than that. So you have to sort of keep that in mind. And so when you go to a state like Oklahoma or you go to a state like Utah where there isn't a large African-American population, well, then what's going to happen? You know, and so I think that split becomes more likely. I still think we haven't seen, you know, we've only seen one day of poll numbers that have been able to record post-second debate where Obama won pretty big. You also have to remember that already some of those polls were cooling down mm-hmm. based upon the fact that the bounce that Romney had gotten was cooling down. I mean, I don't think besides Rasmussen shows it tied. That should tell you something at 48-48. And I think outside of Gallup, every other national poll in the last 24 hours has shown Obama ahead by varying margins from
right.
like one point to 5 points. So, yeah, I'm not saying I think that's going to happen. I just brought up a few months ago that if it's going to happen, that's the most likely scenario and that could happen. You know, and it's just another reason why the electoral vote thing is crazy. And I don't think
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about because I don't know that we'll have this conversation again about the electoral vote. But I mean, let's just for a moment just go there. And the president wins the electoral college. And I imagine he would win it somewhat handily. I mean, it wouldn't be, you know, by a couple of electoral votes. It could be, you know, by double-digit electoral votes and still lose the popular vote. I guess that would be sort of tricky. But What do you think would happen to the
Torah? I think that likely could happen. I mean, I don't want to interrupt, but if you look at the current scenario right now, you know, having worked at a few big polling firms and on presidential races and stuff, I mean, I do have a background in this. I'm no Nate Silver, you know, not even close. It's why I moved more towards writing and away from the number stuff. But I do have a background, and I think I've got some understanding of this. And I will still point out the fact that there was only one person in 1996 when we sat and filled out our cute little electoral maps at Penn and Schoen who got nailed every single state. That was me. I beat Penn and Schoen, and I'm going to brag about that on your show right now because I know what everybody listening to the show
well,
thinks
about. Well, to be
about,
fair, Mark Penn probably Penn had 14 other clients that he was servicing in
Colombia.
Yeah, and, right. I mean, there's a lot of dictators in the world. And
a lot of dictators and predatory companies as well as military juntas and arms dealers that need help. So, yeah, you do have to keep all that in mind. So what I've always said is you always have to look at a number of different polls and you need to use common sense.
Right.
All right. If you see something showing, when I saw a poll showing Obama up, to give you an example that I don't just do this for Republicans, there was, I think, a poll up about 2 weeks ago that showed Obama up 15 in New Hampshire. Yeah, I didn't take that seriously.
Really? Why is that? I'm being facetious.
Why didn't I take?
No, I'm being facetious.
Okay.
No, okay.
I thought for a second, wow, you're that's why you're such a good actor, Sam.
Yeah,
you had
exactly.
me there.
No, exactly.
You had me. That it's stuff like that that made you the manorexic you are today. but I digress. No. I mean, you know, so you have to factor out all that stuff. And what it tells me is that everything I've said to you about Ohio, I think, is applicable to the greater Midwest, which is the combination of factors here, the assaults on unions that went on in Wisconsin, that went on in Ohio, that went on to a certain degree in Michigan, you know, the auto bailout, the ads that have been shown here that have particularly affect people based upon Bain and some of the stuff. Because remember, most of those worst case scenarios you've seen have been in Midwestern states, have been in Indiana and Missouri and places like that where Bain has done its worst damage. Illinois right now with the whole Sensata story. And that seeps into local media too. Those stories in Illinois get out to states surrounding Illinois, some of which are swing states, you know? I think that, you know, all of that together has created this situation in the Midwest where the Midwest, even when Romney had that performance, just hasn't seemed to budge for the most part. Ohio, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, these, you know, Minnesota, which used to be considered a swing state not too long ago, you know, I mean, they've gotten – the only place they've made up any ground from where they were a few years ago is Wisconsin, and I think that's because the Scott Walker thing, when they won that race, bolstered – made people pretty excited there. And made people, you know, and got some of the conservatives excited and turned them out. And then I think on top of that, picking Paul Ryan just because of name recognition,
right.
You know,
and
tends to add a few points.
We should also say that Romney, I don't think, has been in Wisconsin in almost 2 months.
That's true.
And there's nothing that helps Romney's image more than scarcity.
If he's not being seen, absence certainly makes the heart grow fonder when it comes to Romney. So I think those are all important points. You know, which is to say, the lead that he seems to have grown, it seems to grow in red states. He maybe has even gotten closer in blue states that aren't being contested, like New York and Massachusetts. So maybe he's not down 30 points now. He's only down 25.
Right.
You know, and on top of that, in a few swing states where, you know, these ads haven't worked as well, where these union battles haven't gone on in such a public way. So in North Carolina, obviously, it seems like he's pulled ahead more. It seems like he's gained ground in Virginia, where Obama was way up, and now maybe he's only up by a little bit. He's gained ground in Florida, where it seems to either be even money, or at this point I might give Florida, sadly, to Mitt Romney. And a few of the western states, you know, it seems that Colorado has gotten closer. But in this core Midwestern states, he hasn't seemed to gain anything. And again, and also in New Hampshire. And at the end of the road, it's pretty simple. If he cannot get New Hampshire, he cannot get Ohio, he cannot get Wisconsin, he cannot get Iowa and Nevada because of the Hispanic population and all the good work you did at giving them your money at the casinos, which has bolstered the economy there.
Yes.
If you add all – no, I mean, seriously, in Nevada too, when you add all that up, there's just not a path to victory. I don't care what happens in the popular vote.
Let's contemplate this for a moment. Obama wins the Electoral College – you know, not, handily, I mean, or solidly, let's say.
Let's say around 300 electoral votes is what I'm looking at. 290 to 300 is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, so we're talking a, you know, a significant double-digit lead, but loses the popular vote by half a percentage or a percentage.
Yes. Which I think could happen.
It could happen. I mean, I think it's unlikely, but it could happen. What happens then? I mean, like, you know,
what happens then, Sam, is if you have, like, just for fun, an old sore loserman sign from 2000.
Right.
Get that out of the, and start marching around in Republican faces, because they'll try to take the election away.
I don't think there's going to be much difference. Yes. I mean, I don't think there's going to be much difference in the behavior, legislatively speaking, from the Republicans. But the level of agitation will be sort of, you know, full on Tea Party. Obamacare is taking our guns away from us or something. And
right.
Is there a chance?
I think you'll also see people on TV who are supposed to be part of the mainstream, you know, quote unquote. Somebody comes to mind immediately, and I feel sad saying this because, you know, you and I were together. Oh no, you weren't there. I think you were playing the tables. But James Carville gave a great speech at that conference we were at.
Uh-huh.
But I can see someone like Mary Matlin. It's a perfect example. People like that going on in the news and saying that electors should flip their votes. And considering none of these guys, it doesn't really matter because they don't remember anything that happened. Like as recently as 6 months ago, if it hurts their case, hell, Mitt Romney doesn't remember what he said yesterday. They're not going to, you know, everything that they said in 2000, every single argument they used, they will now use the opposite. They will lobby electors. They'll try to go to state legislatures and see if they can get them to pass resolutions trying to get to pressure electors to change their votes. Believe me, they'll do it.
Interesting.
I think they'll do it here where they've got. You know, in Ohio, they've got they control the state legislature. They'll do it in Wisconsin, where they do, in a number of other states like that, especially the ones where the vote was the closest. You know,
now they won't get there. They won't be able to do that. I don't think that'll be possible. But there will certainly.
Oh, I don't think it'll happen. But think about, you know, people like you and me who aren't just, you know, and hopefully, and not hopefully, definitively, I would say, virtually every single person who listens to your show, who care about this country. You know, people like you and me who think it's an embarrassment, for example, to the country that we care about, besides the individual stories of people hurting, you know, to me, one of the biggest things that always got me about not having universal health care, you know, what I'd argue with conservatives is, do you understand what this makes us look like to the world, and don't you care? You know, and the way these guys act affects us. It affects how foreign countries behave towards us. It affects how seriously people take us. It affects our currency. It affects our credit rating. It affects a lot of things. And if these guys try to gin up a crisis, it's going to hurt us.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I think the 2000 thing was even more despicable. I mean, and, you know, even rather than, like, you know, Mary Matlin and Eric Erickson getting on CNN and saying, like, you know, we need to, you know, this is a coup or whatever. I mean, despite I'm not so worried about that. My question is, is there then a genuine movement, you know, almost by accident on the right, to get rid of the Electoral College, because a pure national vote in the main will be great for those of us on the left, right? Because it means all of a sudden that your urban centers become more in play, that the very populous states of California and New York become more in play. And it completely changes our politics.
Oh, I mean, no, I guess you're right in that case. I mean, look, if it leads to us getting rid of the Electoral College, as somebody who believes in good government, I don't want the Electoral College. I've wanted to get rid of it for a long time, and not just because of what happened in 2000. It, obviously, you know, it's my problem is with the people that will try to change the rules right now.
Right,
you know
of course.
I mean? You know, they've campaigned a certain way in certain states and done other things, and they've done that specifically because they've been playing by the rules that exist. If it means that we don't have some sort of a crisis where we have a week or 2 weeks or however many weeks where these guys are lobbying electors, running paid advertisements by the Koch brothers, right, calling Obama an illegitimate president.
They'll definitely do – yeah. I mean, that's exactly what would happen there. Right?
And that's embarrassing. And again, it's not just embarrassing. It's not about, well, I feel embarrassed. It hurts us. It emboldens our enemies. And I'm sorry if that sounds like George W. Bush, but I don't say that about democratic criticism. I say that about, you know, which should exist in a democracy. We should question our leaders. We should question their policies. But when you question the legitimacy of our system and you attack our system, and I think that is a dangerous sign to send to a lot of places. And again, it's not just about, you know, terrorism or whatever. It's about all sorts of things. It's about all sorts of international relations. It's about, you know, how it affects. I mean, these are things that people on the right never seem to understand when they do whatever it takes to win, when they shut down the government with Bill Clinton and they impeach him. But while he was paying attention to what was going on with Monica Lewinsky, you know, the Al-Qaeda guys were plotting 2001.
Right.
You know, while you're doing that, there are all sorts of government of international potential crisis points. You know, Pakistan and India that have nukes pointed at each other, China and Taiwan, the Middle East, and things like that that you're not paying attention to, and people that are looking at you less legitimately as a president. And I just think that is harmful. And so that is kind of my concern here. And you know.
I would like to, I hope this goes without saying on some level, but, you know, I'm sitting in a room with two guys who are like, I don't know, five or ten or six when George Bush became president. But, no, maybe a little bit older. But Al Gore won the popular vote by half a million votes. Al Gore won the popular vote by half a million votes. And, lost the Electoral College basically by, I guess, one vote on the Supreme Court. And so, you know, there's precedent for something like this to happen. It'll be interesting. But I will say this. In the event that that happens, we will have something to that will occupy us, because it now appears that to the extent that we will have a grand bargain to deal with, which we will, I believe.
Yes.
At least an attempt at it. It will not happen in the lame duck session, it appears, right? I mean, there's two things that have happened that have made that the case over the past, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks. And I think we touched on this last week when we were in Vegas. I can't believe it was only a week ago. It feels like
years ago,
because I think I've been in such a state of denial and I lose a couple $100.
I've just missed you since then, Sam. So it's been tough on me.
But, Schumer, I think we talked about Chuck Schumer coming out and throwing a monkey wrench into the whole thing. Is that? Did we talk about that?
We did. We did. Well, I mean, well, I know you and I did, like, to each other. I think we talked about it on the air when we were there too. But Schumer and Harry Reid have done it now. Right.
Just to remind people, Schumer came out and said this whole notion where we're going to cut deductions and stuff like that and keep the rates, you know, under the Bush tax regime. No. The tax rates need to go up. And that threw a monkey wrench into the whole plan. And much of that, it seems to me, was about Schumer and Dick Durbin. Yeah. I mean, and Bowles Simpson.
Right. No, I know. And I, you know, there's an organized effort afoot. And to be clear, you know, I'm involved with this. I work with Social Security Works and there are many others, and we're talking about dozens upon dozens of organizations and some great bloggers out there, you know, who care about this issue, and people like yourself who do, Sam. So you know, I one of our listeners who I brought up before, Gaius Publius, who writes for America Blog, wrote a great sort of piece outlining, you know, who people are, 29 senators who've signed on and said they will not cut Social Security at all. And he kind of breaks down the list of people who haven't signed, by who's running for office right now, who's up in 2014, you know. And the thing about Schumer is that, you know, is that we have to create the whole, you know, the way that you win these things, you need to create the right incentives for people. Schumer has an incentive, which is he's going to be up against Durbin if they want to take over for Harry Reid. If somebody's going to take over, it's going to be Schumer or Durbin, and Durbin's Obama's guy. You know, Durbin right now is with them on whatever they choose to do. So it creates an interesting dynamic. Schumer has every sort of incentive to be with us.
It's very strange. I mean, it's very strange because Durbin has sort of traditionally been more of the progressive, in my estimation. And Schumer, of course, you know, the senator from Wall Street. But
to give credit where credit's due, you know, Schumer, again, yes, on the Wall Street stuff, on choice and guns, which I work on, he's been phenomenal. and on health care he was. He was one of the first ones who stood up and fought on the public option. So, you know, you're right. I think overall you could say Durbin maybe a little bit more. But, you know, when it comes to this stuff, you know, this is important. And, right. And having Harry Reid and having Schumer on with us on this is important. I mean, basically, you can see the people who haven't signed yet are a combination of mostly two groups. You know, one are the ones who are more of the I have to pretend I'm or not, I have to pretend maybe I am moderate. You know, to I'm a moderate to conservative Democrat because I'm from whatever state I'm from.
Let's just say when we say moderate, what we really mean is corporatist.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just say that you're right. I said moderate in my own mocking way, but if we want to be honest about it, corporatist. And there's a few of them that there's no excuse for, like the two Delaware senators who are from a very progressive state. Although I know obviously there's a little bit more of a corporatist side to Delaware because of the credit cards being there, but still. I don't accept that. And then there's most of the other ones are from the states where they think it plays better to be a corporatist, even though it doesn't, but they're all fooled into thinking that. And then you've got the few people that are either close Obama allies or want to be in an Obama cabinet. You know, Durbin, John Kerry, people that you would expect that would be with us normally on this.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to be the next Secretary of State, you know.
Right.
So, and I have a lot of good things to say about John Kerry, not on this. This will be an organized effort. And if any of these guys think that they're going to get away with this without a lot of people knocking on their doors, signing petitions, calling, it's going to get real uncomfortable.
And
we
should say this is probably going to happen after January 1st. And the reason is because the White House came out this week and basically said we will veto anything in the lame duck that doesn't allow tax cuts on the top marginal rates, the over $250,000, the Bush tax cuts set to expire, I think it's January 1st, to expire.
Yeah.
And so essentially what President Obama has done, and this is, you know, folks, you should really sort of like, this is, I think, an example of the progressive base pushing back on things. When you look where we were in over the summer, you know, specifically, I remember when people were really going after like Sheldon Whitehouse and I think Dick Durbin was at Netroots and saying the strategy, the debate on what the strategy was going to be in terms of these Bush tax cuts was still up in the air. And everybody was saying like, it is so obvious for you to just let these tax cuts expire and then come back after January 1st and in the theoretically, I guess, January 20th, really, or whenever the new Congress is in session, come back and then offer
up tax cuts for everybody who makes less than $250,000 and let these guys block it.
And it sort of seems almost impossible to digest, but there was really – significant debate about this, and now it seems like the president has basically signed on to that plan, and
which I like.
That's where all the leverage is. Now the question
is: there were people on the left who were disagreeing and saying he should just let them all expire, and there shouldn't be any tax cuts for anybody. And
well, I mean, look,
I disagree with that right now. I know I've broken with some of my friends on the left on that. But I feel like, and you don't think the $250,000 number is right, and that I think is arguable, but I really just don't think right now there are people who we can't get enough aid to, and I just don't think for people that are impoverished, particularly people who are making less than $50,000 a year, and even in some cases 75 and upwards of that, who are getting reamed right now by all sorts of college loans and by the rest, I just don't think we should be raising taxes on people like that.
Well,
I don't.
Well, I mean, you know, for me, it depends on what the makeup of the House and the Senate is. I mean, if we're assuming that it's a Republican House, these tax cuts are, well, if you let them expire on middle-class people who are basically living paycheck to paycheck or are going to spend this money rather than sort of invest it and make it unproductive, it is going to have an anti-stimulative effect for people under, I don't know if it's 250,000 or 150,000 or wherever it is. But in the event that we could actually take those taxes and then actually provide like an American Jobs Act, like the president suggested a year ago, $50 billion worth of new spending.
Well, that would be my first choice.
But, right. But that's a function of where we stand there. And so, you know, and there's reason to be concerned, again, that even with that leverage, Social Security and things like Medicare are going to be put on the table, even though they have nothing to do with.
Although what I should say, even though, Sam, is my first choice would be both. I just think, again, there are people right now who are suffering in all sorts of ways because of you know, a variety of things. Some things we blamed the president for in the past and not being aggressive enough when he had an opportunity. But other times, but obviously the Republicans have blocked everything since then and they've been obstructionist and people are hurt out there. So I don't really feel like anybody's lives who should be made more difficult, stressful, should be made to suffer more in any way. I think people should be able to keep some of those tax cuts at the, who are at the bottom and get a spending thing, because we shouldn't care as much about deficits right now, because you generally don't do care about deficits when you're trying to stimulate a damn economy,
right,
which anybody with common sense knows.
At the very least, we know that the moratorium on Social Security taxes, that's going to go by the wayside. We're not going to see that. And I'm happy about that, because even though we know that the Social Security was getting reimbursed from the general fund, I just don't like the idea that we're going to Social Security to essentially provide these tax cuts. You want to provide it in other ways? You want to have more earned
income? Go to the Bernie Sanders plan.
Right.
You know, say go and make, again, make them once again, not just block tax cuts, but block more tax increases on rich people. I just don't see why you wouldn't offer tax increase after tax increase on the wealthiest and make them make them block every single one of them to make it clear. And what Bernie Sanders' plan was because the Obama administration said they would not raise taxes on people making less than $250,000. It was to say, if you make north of that, we're going to eliminate that silly payroll cap. Payroll tax cap, and just open it up for above $250,000 and treat that income the way we treat all income today, up to what, about $110,000, which is what we should do. And then, you know, let them block that then if they want to. Let them remind people who the hell they care about and who they don't care about, because we win either way. I'd rather that we win by getting a good policy passed that helps people. But if they're going to claim that they care about Social Security and they're going to claim that they care about the solvency of the program, even though we know that that's just a joke and there isn't any issue there, but they've sort of now created their own narrative about how much they care about Social Security, fine, prove it.
Right.
Here's your opportunity, you know, raise taxes on the richest of the rich when it comes to payroll taxes. Go ahead. We're offering you that opportunity to make sure Social Security is taken care of till the end of time. You know,
did you hear that, establishment? Cliff Schechter has thrown down the gauntlet. And what better way to say see you next week than that?
I don't know that it gets any better, quite frankly. But I will. But, you know, it is always tough to leave, Sam.
I know. So. I know. I wish we had more time, buddy.
Parting.
We haven't even done the teaser for next Monday night's foreign policy debate. But alas. You folks are going to have to follow Cliff on Twitter at Cliff Schechter.
Very nice.
More Cliff until next Friday.
That's right. So, and I like how you used alas. So we really should probably leave on that note.
Indeed. Cliff Schechter, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thanks, buddy, as always. I appreciate it.
Soon. Bye. All right, folks. And we're going to go out. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to have a little bit more from Decomposure at Blank Squirrel. It's blanksquirrel.com. You can get more links to the thing, to the album Eating Chicken. And if you go to bandcamp.com, use the coupon code majority, you get 20% off the album, off of, I guess, all of Decomposure albums. Is there more than one? Because I've listened to Eating Chicken. I love it. I'm going to go buy the other ones if there's more. I've never been to Bandcamp, to be honest with you. Is that embarrassing for me to say?
No, it's mainly just for music people.
Okay.
Like you wouldn't, it's not like you'd set one up like you would Twitter or Facebook.
Right. I mean, I used to be all over eMusic. My buddy runs that company. I didn't have the heart to tell him that I stopped subscribing when it got a little expensive. I don't know why I didn't get a free one, actually, from him. But bandcamp.com, look for Decomposure. Use the coupon code Majority. And this song is, this is Oh Brother? Okay, this is Oh Brother. And this is, there's a great video for this. I think it's, is this the one with the dog? He's got two videos that I've seen. One is where he's making his artwork for the cover, which is fantastic. We've got him up on the blog at majority.fm. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Isabel Gillies with some movies.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that part. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Analysts, taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
Some say God when they mean America. Some say courage when they mean hysteria. Some say strength while they cave to terror. Some say bootstraps while they're mostly carried. Some believe they're smart just because they declare it.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. And, oh, before we bring on Isabel Gillies, we've got to play the Isabel Gillies theme song.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Oh gosh, I just
Jimmy.
Isabel,
Jimmy,
I just got an email from Matthew Film Guy, who's now mad at me because I skipped him again. I got confused.
Whoopsie Daisy. Whoopsie Daisy.
It's not. He claims it's two Isabels now since my last appearance. I guess this one is the second Isabel. So,
if it makes you feel any better, Matthew Film Guy, the podcast, the last podcast you were on, our most popular episode of all time.
Wow. So there you go.
Oh, thanks, dude. Thanks. Yeah, way to put a.
I don't know what Matt's
wet
doing.
Blanket on my.
Isabel
next
shows
10
up,
minutes.
And you basically just say like, "Listen, also ran." You don't say that.
You sure don't. Hey, listen.
Michael just tried to
Freud
get
said,
him a compliment.
Ready for this?
Yeah.
Freud said there are no mistakes. Okay?
Well,
there's no mistakes.
No, it wasn't that he made it. It was an accident. I mean, it was a mistake and that he shouldn't say
it's
anything.
It's no accident that you skip over Michael the movie guy.
Well, first of all, his name is not Michael.
Whatever.
It's Matthew. I mean, you don't have to. Wow, now it's getting heated between you two.
It's a throwdown.
Wow.
Do you know what I want to say? Just to get off that topic.
What?
Last time I did this, it was raining cats and dogs too. And it is raining now.
Maybe that's why I shoot you an email. When it's rainy, I'm like, what can be more cheery? How about Isabel Gillies?
Michael.
Yeah, who's Michael?
Whatever.
Yeah,
Michael.
Do you have a cold today, Isabel?
Matthew. No, do I sound like I have a cold?
A little bit.
I haven't spoken in many hours.
Is this the first time you've spoken to somebody in days? What's going on? You're not talking
to
your kids anymore? Well,
in 4 hours or something.
You just sit in a room and wait. You save it all up.
And write.
Right,
and write.
You got the
and
your,
write.
Your latest novel is coming out, right? Isn't it overdue?
Oh my God! Is this the just rail on Isabel Day?
What are you talking
my
about?
My novel's
I'm just
overdue.
Is it
my it's the last podcast with Michael was the best one ever.
Who's Michael?
Matthew.
What is your book overdue?
A little, sure.
It is.
It's a little overdue.
All right,
you know?
I'm not scolding
a little
you.
Bit. I'm on my third draft.
All right. Well, then that's great. It's going to be
it's going to be
a tweener book, right? Is that right?
Yeah, it is.
Am I allowed to say
it?
That?
Is and it. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what it is. It was hard, and I had I did two whole drafts, and then I had an epiphany.
Really?
And I had to change the whole thing.
Well, you made it into like a graphic novel.
No.
What was the epiphany?
I thought, when I pitched the story, there's Twilight, there's all these big sort of epic-y, sci-fi, the Hunger Games.
No.
And that's just not how I roll. That's not really what I write about. That's not what I think about. And so I sort of tried to do that. Not really, but I was writing about something that is not that familiar to me, and I wrote two drafts, and then this is Name Drop Friday, is it not?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so I have had a lifelong admiration, huge worshiping, relationship to Nora Ephron.
I'm not sure you know how Name Drop Friday works, but just naming somebody who exists or did exist is not the point.
Hold on.
Okay.
Just hold on, buddy.
Yeah.
Just hold on.
Oh, let me just drop a name if I could. Just
go ahead.
Once. That would be, I don't know. I'm trying to think of somebody who I really admire.
Wow.
I don't know.
No.
Isabel Gillies.
If you let me finish.
Go ahead.
If you let me finish. So my whole life, I worship her work. I love it. Da, da, da. And then last year, I met her.
Oh.
And I met her 3 times. First time I was at a dinner party, and I couldn't even speak practically. I mean, it was like meeting your hero. It's like meeting Sondheim or meeting whoever's your hero. That's who I met. And
Sondheim's
then,
whatever.
Okay. It is, and you met him, So then I met her again, and then I was standing outside the library last March, and I, where I work. I don't work there anymore, but I used to. And she walked by. Now, listen, I'd met her, but it wasn't like I was calling her on the phone or anything, right?
Right, I understand.
So she walked right by me, and I was having a really hard time writing, very hard time writing. I was downstairs on the street kind of getting some fresh air and thinking, and I saw her, and I was like, oh, hi, Nora Ephron. And she's like, oh, hi.
Let me ask you one question. Why would a composer be my...
It's just, I wasn't. If you met Marx or something.
Karl Marx?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Barry Commoner. Help me out here. I can't,
Barry Common?
Commoner.
Who's that?
He ran the Citizens Party in the 70s. He was probably our first green presidential candidate.
Yep. Sorry.
Yeah, well.
That's really
Google,
funny.
Okay. My friend.
All right,
Google.
So
I saw her, and I was having a hard time, and she said, Isabel, and she'd read one of my books. And she said, Isabel, and I said, I was having a hard time. And she said, Isabel, don't write about people jumping off bridges. Just write what you know. And I was like, oh. And that went in my head. And then she went and walked away. And then that was in March. And then in late June, she died. And when I found out she died, it was like I've never been so, I mean, it was like my mother died or something. Very, very upset. I didn't know her well enough to know she was sick or anything like that. Anyway, so a couple days later, I was sitting around thinking about her, and then I remembered what she said to me. And I was like, oh! And I realized that my whole novel, I was writing from a place that I didn't know. So I wrote a big letter to my editor and to my agent and changed the whole book. Wow. That was the epiphany.
Now, I got to say, you know, write what you know, that's not exactly... Maybe you just needed Nora Ephron to tell you that, but I mean,
it's not, I know, but you know, you can write what. I know, but it's hard. I've been doing that, but then you know, then you get this pressure because you know, all the Twilight and everything. And I was like, oh, I've got to write something that's going to be, you know, dramatic and everything. And really, I just like to write about you know love and wallpaper. And so I realized that had to be. And food, and you know, that's what that's my wheelhouse. So then I realized.
And so is it working out? Is it better? Is this going to be?
So now it's so much better. So now it's good, and now I feel like I can do it. And now it's rolling, and now it's not going to take so long. And now it's good. So it's a big life lesson, even though I'm 42.
Well, there you go. I can't believe you're 42.
I am. I know. I'm almost 43.
I can't. Even
I almost said I was 43 too.
You're upset you were 43?
Isabel Gillies. No.
Oh.
Oh, hell no. You know why? Because it's because I'm getting it. I think I'm getting it a little bit.
I'm not sure I know what that means, but.
It's just to feel a little bit more grounded. I'm like, okay, like don't mess with me. I'm 42.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like I skipped over that. I think I looped back around to like 27.
You do? You feel like you're 27?
Well. Not God. In terms of the amount of fun I was having at that time, but in terms of wow.
I know. Now, that's when we were friends, and we were 27, 26, 27, 25. That's when we met.
Oh, my God, no.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. It is. Everybody in the world out there listening, Sam, we had the same manager, and I was auditioning for a pilot, and Sam was so good at doing pilots and at doing the auditions for them, and it's very scary when you do them because the whole room, if it's CBS, I think it was at CBS, and you're going to have, you know, 50 executives. I don't know if they do it this like this anymore, but sitting in sort of like a room all crammed
the
in.
The test. You mean the final, the network test.
The test. Or I had a test, and it's very, very scary, and I had a test with Bob Newhart. That's who I was, my scene was with. And so... our manager asked Sam to help me with my audition scene before I went in for this big test with Bob Newhart. And that's, remember that?
No. Not at all.
You don't remember doing that?
Not
what?
At all.
What? Are you serious?
What?
You don't remember that?
What did I do?
That was in L.A.
Did I play Bob Newhart?
No, you just helped me with my scene.
Oh.
And then the next day I went in for Bob Newhart, and the thing about that was if you're at CBS and there's some no-name in the room and there's Bob Newhart and you're doing a sitcom funny thing, who is everybody going to laugh at?
Oh, well, I mean, if I'm in the room,
Bob Newhart.
But
you're not in the room. I'm in the room and Bob Newhart's in the room.
Well, that's just
so
sexism.
Who are they going to...
That's just full-on sexism.
No, I would say a funny line, and it would be silent, and then Bob Newhart would say sort of a not funny line, and everyone
Right, of course.
And through me, because all my other auditions, I wasn't with Bob Newhart, and they would laugh at my lines. But then with Bob Newhart, no one's laughing at me. Everyone's laughing at Bob Newhart, and I didn't get the show.
Well, that was their loss. What was the show? The show never got made, did it?
Or something.
Oh,
I don't know. It was about Bob Newhart in a hotel or in a
the next Bob Newhart show, and that was the one that ended
that
with him waking up from a dream where he went back to his original wife. I can't remember who was his original wife in the original Bob Newhart show. That
I don't
the
know.
One where he's in the hotel ends with him in bed with his wife. He wakes up from a dream and he turns over and it's the Newhart wife from his first show. And I can't remember her name. Forgive
That's
me.
Sort of sweet.
And he's like, you're not going to believe this dream I had. I had this dream that I had this hotel and that I was married to somebody else. And yeah, I mean, it was an interesting way of doing it.
I think that's cool, actually. I sort of vaguly remember that, too. I don't know why, because I never really
Suzanne
watched
Suzanne Plachette.
Those
that's right. Suzanne Plachette.
Oh, you Thank Googled. You Googled.
No. Lawyer Matthew IM'd me. So that's...
Oh, really?
My attorneys... I have a cadre of attorneys who advise me on all my pop culture.
No one emails me. Come on, people.
Well, people should be tweeting you on Twitter.
Yeah. What did I tweet today? I tweeted, during the election.
Let's give people the reason. One thing I wanted to ask you, Isabel, before you give me the movie recommendation.
Can we talk about the debate?
We could talk about the debate. I was going to ask you.
Are you sick of it?
No, I was going to ask you specifically, as somebody, I don't know how, I mean, you're relatively politically in touch, right? What are people
relatively?
Why? And maybe this is, you know, I don't know. Maybe, you know, you're New York liberal, so maybe it doesn't really, you know. But how is it that Romney closed that gap with women? In your estimation,
has he?
That answers that.
Has he?
I mean, a little bit.
I can't. Maybe because what I mean. What I during when I was watching the debate, all the women in the binders and all of his, just how horrible he is on women and women's issues and everything. My Twitter feed was not. There's no gap closing there.
Well, no, it was after the first debate. After the first debate,
and the polls were showing that women were okay with that. Well, listen. Listen, when I was campaigning for John Kerry a long time ago in Ohio, I would say, you know, a woman would answer when I was on the phone, and she would say, "There are Bush signs in our yard, but I'm going to vote for Kerry." I mean, women are intimidated. They're intimidated. This guy gets. I mean, that Romney was mansplaining to Candy Crowley. I mean, that was a horrendous way to talk to anybody, and he was just bulldozing.
I mean, to be fair,
Romney
to Romney,
Candy,
he talks to everybody that way. He thinks that everyone is beneath him in some respects.
Yes, he does. But a lot of women in this country feel that they're beneath people like Romney. It's just, you can't, there's, it's not good or bad. I mean, it's bad, but it's not, there's nothing you can do about it. That's just history. And so if you have a husband in your house that's like that, and you feel like that anyway, because you didn't, you know, no one chose you when you were raising your hand or when you were in a theater company, it was only the boys that got the role or whatever. I mean, being a woman in this country isn't exactly empowering. And so even though you hear all this stuff of like it's equal and you're just as strong and your voice is just as important, you don't believe it. So then you might believe it a little bit, but then a man like Romney, this white guy who ran a company and everybody says is smart and he seems like he's smart because he's kind of in the first debate, you know, seeming like he's doing well, you're like, oh, well, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, I'll vote for him because, wait, you're going to vote for him, husband? Okay, well, I just will, too. I mean, I feel like you can get pushed around very easily as a woman in this country, and it's you know, I went to all-girls schools. I was told from the beginning of my life that I was equal, and I never find that in the workplace ever.
Well, I mean, I think that's the case. I mean, I think
yeah,
it's the case.
I think it's easy for a woman to even though there's Obama making everything a family issue, which was so smart of him. He was saying this isn't a woman's issue, this is a family issue, because he knows that having it be a women's issue is like an icky, you know. It's got to be a family issue, so the man gets in there and your kids get in there. This isn't a woman's issue. It's a family issue. You kept saying that over and over again.
I got really annoyed by Romney saying that, like, look, women need the flexibility to deal with their kids. You know who else needs the flexibility to deal with the kids? Dad!
Well, someone said, how about it's like, I let the women in my office go home and cook dinner. Screw you. Screw you. Are you kidding me? Oh, okay. That's easy. Work all day for you and then go home and haul in the groceries. Oh, quick, go home and buy the groceries, then haul them in and feed them to your kid. I mean, that was the most aggravating thing. That's right. That's what I want. I don't need equality to go home and cook dinner, dude. I need equality in my paycheck.
Right.
Idiot. God, he's an idiot. You know what? He just makes me so angry because he's just one of those people. He's just going to get away with it. He's just going to get away with everything.
Well, I don't know if he's going to get away with everything. I mean,
well, he better not win. He won't get away with it if he wins, but he better not win.
Well,
he gets away with talking to people like that. He snapped at Candy. He was like, no. She was like, let's move on. No. Don't talk to me like that on national television.
I like it. Isabel Gillies. Just
my heart
like,
why haven't we discussed politics with Isabel before? Jeez, this is great.
This is we should have been doing more of this. I mean, now we've ruined your 352 days and not getting mad on your blog.
my heart rate just went up a little bit. Oh, I can get mad about politics. I don't really, but I just love Obama too. I got goosebumps when Romney was like, you know, giving him all this crap about Libya and what happened, and he was like, do not mess with me about that.
That was actually one of his strongest moments, where he said, you know, it's offensive of you to claim that, to play politics with us and claim that we would be doing that.
That's what he said, it's offensive.
Let's get to the movie.
Okay.
Now, let me say one thing.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the sushi movie yet. Matt did.
Okay. You know,
Matt did.
Oh, he did.
I'm going to see it. He said it was great. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it. But I just this past week or two has been just really tricky.
Little cuckoo-loony.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt, for watching it. That was good. We're going down a different road today, and it's because November brings to us the 50th anniversary of James Bond. Dun-dun. Dun-dun. Do you know that, November?
Well, I mean, I know there's a new movie coming out. I'm looking forward to that.
There is. In November, it's going to be the 50th anniversary of James Bond movies. So I watched Moonraker, 1979.
Is that
I was like,
with Roger Moore?
That's right. Roger Moore, Lois Child.
Jaws. Oh.
Yeah. And let me tell you something. Here's the thing. You think you're going to watch a Bond movie from 1970? Oh, what?
I don't know, what? Dude.
Why did I get that music?
I don't know. I was trying. I was taking a break. No, the Bond music. Believe me, I've watched every Bond 5,000 times.
I think the James Bond series is the most overrated movie series ever. I just do not like the James Bond movies.
Wow.
Wait, hold
Them's
up.
Them's fighting words, my friend.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Isabel, can I ask you a quick question? Can you...
What?
Sorry. Can you repeat the name of that Bond movie again?
Moonraker.
I didn't catch
Moonraker.
That. Okay. All right, I haven't
Moonraker,
heard of that one.
1979. What? How old are you?
Me? Or Michael?
Have you never heard of Moonraker?
No, Michael was not alive at that time. Do you understand what I'm dealing with?
He wasn't?
I wasn't familiar with Moonraker either. So that's two people here.
What? Well, then, hi. I guess I'm going to school you a little bit, and you should go watch it, because here's the thing. Here's what's fun about Moonraker. Made in 1979... You've got Roger Moore, who's so elegant and erudite and aristocratic and cool and a badass. And then you've got Lois Child, who's just this... it's not the worst Bond. Are
he's the worst Bond.
He's not the worst Bond.
Yeah,
I like them all. They all have their different qualities. But, okay, so this was a hugely expensive film to make. They shot in California, Venice, Rio... the Amazon, and in space, okay? So what you have is the 1979 version of sort of a Mission Impossible. And let me tell you something, it holds up. It's very impressive. It totally holds up. And you just, you get your groove on. You get your popcorn, you get your glasses, you curl up, and you just give in to 1979. It's fun.
Mm.
Jaws.
I can't wait to see that. I cannot wait to see the...
the sushi movie?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Moonraker. I just, Jaws was just like, I don't know. You know, I thought Roger Moore was good in The Saint, but he seems to me to be the guy's just too ascot-wearing and not like for Bond. Do I think Timothy Dalton was better, somebody IM'd me? I don't know. Timothy Dalton, I guess, was pretty bad. But
what about Sean Connery?
Sean Connery was the best. And then I think even arguably this dude now, what's his name?
Daniel Craig.
Yeah, he could be even better.
Yeah, youngin'. What is his name, youngin'?
Daniel Craig. I didn't know if you're talking about me or you were calling him a youngin'.
No, he might be as old as me, that Daniel Craig. Oh, God, don't Google him and now he's like 30 or something.
No, he's our age.
He's our age.
I don't want to say our age because I'm considerably older than
him.
He's older.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Sam.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
Yes.
I was just trying to take you down a fun path of maybe revisiting the 70s because we've got such an anniversary coming up.
All right. That's a great idea. All right. I can buy that.
Take your pick. Go see... when I wasn't looking, somehow you found me.
Okay.
What's that one? The Spy Who Loved Me. How about that?
Isabel, we got to go.
Yeah.
I think we got to go now.
Wow. Okay, I start singing and it's bye-bye for me.
Okay. What's that? All right, yeah. I mean, it's the Spy Who Loved Me was actually, I think I remember being a little bit better, frankly. And I know that was Roger.
Well, maybe this recommendation is, If you're in the mood, if it's raining, take a stroll down some James Bond memory lane to some James Bond.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
I chose Moonraker, but maybe choose another one. Maybe it's fun for your kids.
All right.
Not that violent.
Yeah, I don't know if Miles is ready for that, but
I don't know. Jaws is pretty scary.
Isabel, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Cool.
Bye. All right, let's take a quick musical interlude. We'll be right back with your phone call, 646-256. Oh, wait, no, 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 whoa, whoa. Actually, let's hear the song of the week from Jimmy Reefer Cake, and then we'll take your phone call, 646-257-3920, and your IMs. Here is Jimmy Reefer Cake's song of the week, inspired by Tag Romney's. God, you go through life as a guy with the name Tag. I mean, come on. Tag Romney's comments about the president. Here it is.
Oh, these freaking debates. God. I'm just a peace-loving hippie. I'm not a violent guy. But these politicians piss me off when they lie. I'll set the new debate rules. I'm gonna clean up this place. Anyone who lies at all gets a punch in the face. You deserve a punch in the face. Punch in the face, punch in the face. Tag Romney wanted to rush up on the debate stage and take a swing at Obama. It'll be a ratings bonanza. Smash, hit it. No one will be seriously injured. We'll get The Rock or Hulk Hogan or some celebrity to administer the punches.
Yeah.
With big old boxing gloves. We'll have a panel of experts with buzzers.
Mitt Romney was the one who was lying.
Yeah, they'll find out who lies.
Who lies?
Who lies? At the end of the bait, you'll know who won or lost by the marks upon their face. That's right. You deserve a punch in the face. Punch in the face. Punch in the face.
Jimmy Reefer Cake. It's going old school, right?
Very good. It's a bit like old school New York hardcore.
Uh-huh.
bit of maybe like Gnostic Front inspired, maybe.
There you go. You got a little bit of Gnostic Front call out there. Are we doing a Freebie Friday? Do we have a...
You want to do a Freebie Friday? I don't have those. You do, I believe. I don't think you ever sent me those.
You're kidding.
Because you edited Jeremo's one.
Uh-huh. Well, we're going to do a Freebie Friday, but I don't think I have the audio. Sorry, folks. Been a tough... Oh, wait a second. Here it is. Hold on. I thought I had it. I guess not. I get. Let's just go to the phone, shall we? Gosh. You're calling from a 631 area code. Who's this? 631.
Hey, what's up? My name is Andrew. How you doing?
Good. How you doing, Andrew?
I was a fan of you and Janine on America, Air America Radio and such. And I have no specific affiliation to the Republicans or the Democrats. And my question is I certainly would like to try to get some real, true information. Now, obviously, you're not going to get that from the Hannitys or the Chris Matthews of the world. And but where would one go that doesn't have a political affiliation? That's more centrist. It's in the middle. Doesn't have affiliation to the Democrats. Doesn't have affiliation to the Republicans. Where would you suggest one goes to get credible information to really find out about, the politicians that are running for office? Obviously,
you got it right now, buddy. You're listening to it. This is the most credible show that exists anywhere. I am not being facetious. I have no affiliation with anybody. Barely my family. What's the question? Ask me a question. You want to know something? I'll tell you it.
It's not really a question. It's just like you had the gentleman on yesterday in regards to the Romney making money on the Delphi and the bailout, etc.
Right.
How realistic? That's not the right word, sir. But how
accurate?
It's his information.
I think it's very credible. I think, listen, the only thing I would say is that there are some people who would say there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I mean, he's not claiming there's anything illegal about what Mitt Romney did. And there's plenty of people who would say that's not hypocritical of Mitt Romney to do that. And I think that's I don't think that I wouldn't agree with that perspective, or maybe I wouldn't even have a problem with that perspective. But I mean, the idea that he did it, I'm sure that it's quite easy to find out, frankly, to validate those claims.
Here's my question. Now, I'm certainly not calling up and supporting Romney by any means. My question is what it is. Where do I go to get the information? Who answered that? So my next question would be, the whole dialogue between you and the guy, I forgot the guy's name, I'm sorry, but it seems as though to be the slant that what Romney did in that money-making scheme, all right, in that money-making endeavor was wrong. Now, is that really fair to say that it's wrong? I mean, is it wrong to say the things that he did in Bain Capital, there were companies that were outsourced? Wouldn't that be more that he did his job well, or why is that considered a bad thing?
I'll tell you why. Nothing he did was illegal. Nothing he did was illegal. And is it wrong? Well, that's just a subjective thing. I mean, I think that someone could listen to the story and read the story that Greg Palast did and say, you know what? I every single aspect of this, I think, is valid reporting, but I do not think there is a problem with this. Now, this is where I deliver my opinion, okay? And my opinion is that, A, being a leverage buyout guy who has gone around to some what I consider sketchy sources to raise capital initially, Panamanian and oligarchs, et cetera, but whatever. It doesn't matter.
Right.
That, to me, does not qualify you to in some way give you some abilities to, A, create jobs if that's your claim. And because this, remember, this is where most of this comes up about Bain. He says, I'm a job creator. No, he's not a job creator. That's just a lie. I mean, they went in, they financialized companies. And I think this is a bigger problem than Mitt Romney, frankly. And I wish there was more national politicians who would make this argument. I believe the financialization, turning corporations, brick and mortar corporations, companies that produce products, turning those into financial instruments. In other words, we're going to lard up this company with debt. We're going to get management consultant fees. We're going to use this debt to get also tax benefits on our leverage buyout fund. And then if the thing goes out of business, it just goes out of business. We put it into bankruptcy. It doesn't matter. We've already got our money. I think that's very bad for the country. I also, on top of that, I also think that anybody who operates with that mentality, that the only thing that's important is for me to make money, I don't think that's the type of person that I want in public service. Because A,
right.
I think they have too narrow a set of values, frankly, that is not going to provide broad enough prosperity to people. That's a problem right there, I think. B, it also right. leads me to believe that their experiences are such that they value people like them more than others. And I think you can see that more relevantly in most of Mitt Romney's policies. I think his job experience is indicative of that. And so when Delphi, when these hedge funds come in and they basically, instead of saying like, you know, look, it's their job to maximize their profits, right? I mean, that's the only thing they care about. And they come in and they basically say, we will sink this company. We will sink General Motors and Chrysler Motors unless we get this deal. I mean, it's certainly not illegal what they're doing, but I don't think it's terribly civically minded. And I sort of like the idea that my president would be civically minded. That's all.
Okay.
I mean,
all right. I appreciate the time. I'll keep listening, man. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Take.
All right, let's go to the IMs. A Square. Sam, thank gods it's Friday because Cliff and movie recommendation to take the shock away from that Greg Palast interview. Not sure what was the worst. Maybe learning that Dan Senor could be Secretary of State. Maybe then his wife, Campbell Brown, may be press secretary. Oy, return of the neocons. Another pragmatic reason to vote Obama. We're going to hear a lot more about this, I think, Monday night. Because President Obama, I think, is going to say, like, look, you've surrounded yourself with neocons. You know, last week somebody asked you, how are you different than George Bush? Your foreign policy seems to me to be very similar to George Bush's. You, at least you have all the same people working for it. I think we're going to hear that.
Do you think he's going to bring up, I forgot the name of that factory, the one that has the China flag?
Sensata?
Yeah.
I think we're definitely going to hear Sensata. I think the words China are going to come up, and then you're going to hear this story that Greg Palast talked about. He's just probably going to throw it away. You know, he's going to say, like, when you had investment in Delphi, you guys closed down the Delphi plants, sent all those jobs to China. And fortunately, you know, we had to do it because we had to save those jobs in this country for GM, because he wants to bring that up. Remember, Ohio, that's basically the game. Ohio, Wisconsin, those two states right there. That's the ball game, Johnny ball game. And so you're going to hear Sensata as well. I think that's in Illinois. But again, that story is spreading throughout the Midwest, like Cliff said. So, yes, you will hear that. Defeatocrat, I would love for this scenario you're discussing to occur where Obama wins the election while losing the popular vote. I'm sure it would be all the impetus necessary for finally getting rid of the Electoral College. You know, we were talking about that beforehand. Michael shaking his head. No, he doesn't think. He just thinks it would be basically a shit show, and then we'd still have the Electoral College. I don't know.
It would be a pretty perfect way to keep Obama, you know, with how 2000 happened and how, you know, a lot of people aren't happy with Obama. There's some poetry, but
I'm just saying they can look beyond this electoral cycle and know in the long run, especially with the way demographics are changing, and to have any hope of still holding on, they want the electoral college. They don't want to be able to, you know, people right. maximizing votes in New York and California.
Well, I mean, I don't know. This is an argument against that, isn't it?
I
look,
mean,
they're
as
screwed
a
either
but
way
not,
with the electoral college.
A...
They're screwed either way. Bush and Chains, Limbaugh, President Obama, Michelle Obama's baby daddy. Ryan, war on women is fictional. Bush and Chains, just how big of a farce is Obama faux stock market prosperity? Q3 earnings season to date. Revenue beats equals 41%, misses 59%. And the stock market is up flat. Why? That would defy what the market stands for, wouldn't it? Well, I mean, when has the stock market in the past, I don't know, 20 years been a function of a one-to-one function on revenue versus not, even 41% to 59%? I don't know. It seems to me that the stock market's been sort of a... just a, I don't know, it has not been a function of real world earnings anyways. I don't think that started with Obama. Oops, did Obama's Apple iMonopoly trigger the biggest one-day stock market dip in months? This company is on the precipice of implosion. How big of an effing failure do you have to be to have a cult following, employ children as slaves, have massive hedge funding? If Apple were a person, it would be George W. Bush. Is Mitt Romney a drug launderer? Only Putin appears capable of restoring justice in occupied territories. Noam Chomsky makes his first visit to Gaza. Speaking of Paul Ryan saying that the war on women is fictional, I mean, I think he might be right in saying that the war on women is metaphorical. There are no armies that are attacking women in this country. In that sense, I think Paul Ryan is correct. However, Roe v. Wade has been law of the land for 30 years now, basically giving women sovereignty over their own bodies. We have seen an attack on those rights that has continued on almost since the mid-70s, when I think it was Jerry Falwell and some Republican operatives, I think it was Paul Weyrich, got together and said, hey, we have the recipe for some electoral magic here. And over the past 4 years, I think we've seen the right wing in this country become even more aggressive on this. So that a guy named Joe Walsh, running for Congress in Illinois, it's not the Bible Belt now, mind you. A supposed Tea Party guy. Remember the Tea Party? They're all about fiscal responsibility, whatever that is. Here he is saying that the idea that women have, there needs to be an exception for the life of the woman when it comes to abortion rights for women is a joke, because women's lives are never threatened by a pregnancy anymore because of science. Here we go.
I'm pro-life without exception. Understand, though, when we talk about exceptions, rape and incest are exceptions. They're violent, horrific acts.
Well, I'm pro-choice without restriction. And here's the thing, though. Mr. Walsh would actually, as he said, not for rape, incest, or life of the mother. He would let a woman die rather than to give her, and then to give the doctor the option to save her life.
That's not fair.
And you know,
that's not fair. And wait, here he is. Hold on, pause it. Here he is at a press conference right after that, saying why it's not fair.
Yes, and the candidates continuing their attacks in a brief news conference after tonight's debate. Each candidate spoke to reporters for about 10 minutes, addressing their positions on Medicare and again on abortion.
This is an issue that opponents of life throw out there to make us look unreasonable. There's no such exception as life of the mother. And as far as health of the mother, same thing. With advances in science and technology, there's health of the mother has become a tool for abortions for any time under any reason. The last point I'm going to make, Jeff, is, again, you've got two records on this issue to compare. Mine, pro-life, against Tammy Duckworth's, who supports taxpayer funding of abortion.
So here he's saying that there is no circumstance that the idea of the health or the life of a woman is a fiction, because there are no more circumstances where that's the case. This guy is not only a right-wing nut job, he's an idiot who apparently doesn't even know how to Google, who apparently doesn't even think he can make these proclamations without even talking to a doctor. There is no daylight between this dude and a guy like Todd Akin, who's talking about if you're really raped, you can't get pregnant. I mean, these people are off the rails. And we're talking about Todd Akin sitting on the Science Committee, running for Senate. These people are just, you cannot tell. I mean, you want to say there's no armies attacking women? That's fine. But the idea that women's rights are not under siege by the right wing in this country is laughable. Lawyer Matthew, Dr. Holly Goodhead, James Bond, not kid appropriate, more sex and innuendo than you remember. Yeah, well, who knows what goes on with Isabel's kids? Bingo Mosquito, Isabel would have been 10 or 11 years old to audition for the Newhart show in 1981, if that was the pilot, that is. It must have been a new Newhart show. In 96, it probably was. Jay Tingle, I sense Abu Katala has Dan Senor on speed dial. Not the first time a GOP candidate has colluded with an enemy of the state in order to exclude the incumbent Dem president's national security situation, or even the second, an old odd story, and especially so it's as it's promoted by the Times. Send me a link to that. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about at Majority Reporters, Jay. Matt, you are misled in your assumptions vis-a-vis James Bond. Moonraker had a doubling motif. You prefer Timothy Dalton to Roger Moore? The presence of Jaws in a Bond movie is a plain admission that the series has jumped the shark. Well done. SCTV had a bit called The Meeting of the Minds, in which they debate intellectual questions of academe. Naturally, one segment was high-minded disquisition of who was the best Bond. It devolves quickly, and Martin Short's character rises indignantly and declares they will not have Roger Moore sullied, and storms off. Bartleby, 141, did you see any of the outtakes from the Al Smith dinner? Curious what your reaction was. I find that tradition somewhat irritating in the middle of a race with existential consequences at stake. I watched both the speeches. Romney was a dick in it. President Obama was self-effacing. Obviously, other people write these jokes, but, you know, the fish smells from the head down, I guess, as it were, and it's reflective. You know what we'll do? We'll put the for the members' show, we will put maybe we'll add those two speeches, maybe – I don't know, on Monday, just as a bonus at the end of the podcast, so that, maybe we'll save it even for Wednesday or something like that.
I don't know about Monday. Is Monday the debate?
No, Monday night's the debate. Oh, right.
It'd be too much stuff.
Too much stuff. Maybe Wednesday.
We're giving too much.
Too much. We feel it actually on the server side. That Amazon S3 server,
I feel it in my tiredness and your tiredness and Michael's tiredness.
Ricky Shush from Melissa in Georgia. Moonraker's Bond girl's name was Holly Goodhead. Barbara Babbitt. Have you seen another release from Mitt's 47% video? Don't know if it's new, but I hadn't seen it in part in response to some reminiscing over the Iran hostage situation events for Reagan in the 80s. He said, if something of that nature presents itself, I will work to take advantage of the opportunity. Wow, that's pretty bad. That, of course, is released. I mean, people are focusing on that. I'm not surprised. Right before the foreign policy debate, because that's exactly exactly, right, what he did. What he did with the Benghazi thing, right? I mean, that's exactly what he did. Desperately ran to try and take advantage of it. Now, of course, it was bad. Kirk Saudi, reefer cake, please stop. Kevin Levin, 721, don't you love how that caller naturally assumed that the honest, accurate media source was one that was moderate, middle of the road? Hey, friend, what if the truth is at one extreme of the pendulum because one political extreme holds most of the power and owns most of the media? Read Bond. Read the books. Bond is much more imperfect, fragile hero, not the superhero the movies made him out to be. That's why I like Daniel Craig. Crystal Count. I can't be sure, but I'll wager when the word Moonraker escaped Isabel's otherwise charming movie recommendation lips, Matthew Film Guy may have hurt his left hand from high-fiving his right hand so hard. If I remember by Moonraker, the waist of Roger Moore's pants had finally reached his nipples, and my friends and I came out of the theater yelling, "The name is Bond. Grandpa Bond." I think so. Calhoun, John, Electoral College is never going away. Heck, Madison thought it would go away after Washington was elected and all elections for president would take place in the House. We're stuck with it, and the whole concept was specifically designed to help the elite. Did you see the socialist Obama supporters giving water to Romney supporters? Didn't see it. Gene Ling. Sam, Isabel is right about Romney. He's a horrible, greedy, lying bastard. It is insidious that the so-called Republican Party would put up such a candidate after worst theft from Wall Street bankers since the Great Crash. We must defeat the conservatives worldwide. People are pulling out of the stock market. Europe is burning. Americans beware. Sagita, TransCanada has reaffirmed its plan to restart the Keystone Oil Pipeline. Well, you know, they're building it down in the southern part of the country. Brynhild, as Mormon Bishop Mitt counseled pregnant Mormon woman with blood clot whose doctors advised abortion or she could die not to have an abortion. Yes, I remember that story. Clower, Sam, you can hear the Al Smith speeches in their entirety on Stitcher on the Rachel Maddow show. Well, we can hear it on our show. I like Daniel Craig in other movies, but I have not seen his Bond yet. Also, A Euro Dreams of Sushi is a great documentary. Have you seen Dogtooth yet? No, but I have it on my list. The only reason anybody could call Roger Moore the worst Bond is that they'd forgotten George Lansby. But then who hasn't? Well, Lansby was His Majesty's Secret Service, I think. Is that right?
I have no idea. Is that the one where he's in Switzerland? Is that?
Dude, don't even try.
I hate Bond movies.
Chem Champion, welcome to the program.
Hi, how's it going, Sam?
Good. How you doing?
Doing all right. I wanted to talk about some
Chem,
things.
I'm sorry, buddy. Your Skype connection is bad.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I can't hear a word you're saying. It's just it's all crackly. Held on for all that time, and then it's a bad connection. Bush and Chains, Libertarian Gary Johnson advisor, RNC chair Renz Priebus belongs in a police lineup. The most downloaded app at the New York Fed today because someone has to generate revenue for Apple, Zero Hedge. How could your Zero Hedge actually make an Apple app? Oh, buddy. Bomb blast in Beirut. Oh. Wow. Top security official among the dead in Beirut blast. Wow. Eesh. Syria. Kevin 11721. None of the earlier Craig's Bond was a return to the book. His Casino Royale is very close to the book. None of the earlier Bond movies will allow Bond to suffer the after effects of torture or be tortured at all. Indeed. And the final I Am of the day. One of my favorite Bond films is In Her Majesty's Secret Service. I actually like Lansenby. I wonder if the reboot was inspired by this one. Love story, a bit more realistic. The briefcase with the champagne, caviar, quail eggs, the book, his best gadget. There you go, folks. All right. See you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the rope that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. And I'm shifted into years while I shifted in and out of I'm not somehow.